south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Let me tell you what happened on my way to Roatan lately. You know, Roatan itself has become kind of touristy, though it still is the cheap, low-end diving capital of the Caribbean. So even though they've got some high-end hotels going up on some of the best beaches in the world, there is a section a kilometer or two down from the absolute golden gem of a beach they've got there. It's a secondary white sand beach that's not so luxurious, but still beats the hell out of every beach on mainland Central America anyway. You could say that's where the cheap seats are in Roatan, the other side of the tracks. And the people there, Captain Mango calls scuba trash, where it's just row after row of scuba tanks and diving gear and overburnt, greasy-haired, sweaty gringos doing the diving thing. And of course, that side of Roatan draws its share of backpackers, too. So you got the high-end hotel strip, and it's not a huge strip, and you've got the budget-minded, sweaty gringo backpackers and scuba trash. But, you know, that's the fun side of Roatan, where the cheap drinks and the divers are. Because, you know, as a rule, diving can be expensive, especially places like Belize, Hawaii, Australia, of course, Bahamas, the Cayman Islands, and some of the high-end touristy islands like Virgin Islands, Turks and Caicos, Martinique, and Aruba. So anyway, a little while ago, I was at the mainland jumping-off point, Roatan Island, the ugly and dumpy little city of La Ceiba, Honduras. I think I mentioned I was there just recently on the last show. It's a bustling little town, well, not so little, of around 200,000, but it's pretty spread out, so not a lot of congestion. It's also an ugly little town, a lot of areas you wouldn't want to walk around at night. In the day, it's pretty safe, but dead hot, scruffy, and ugly. Now, here's the thing. I was sitting around with a couple of gringos, and really, there are not many gringos at all in that town, because gringos that head to Roatan for their vacations fly right into the Roatan airport. They got a couple direct flights a day coming out of Miami and linked to all the major airports in the States, etc. So I'd say something like 90 to 95% of all gringos visiting Roatan fly in directly from the States. However, La Ceiba, as mentioned before, has a hydrofoil port. And for something like $25, you can go from La Ceiba to Roatan. It takes about an hour or less. By the way, have you ever been on one of those things? It's a trip. As they get up to speed, they lift right out of the water on gigantic skis. They're plenty fast, but man, are they noisy. I've been on that thing many times. And I'll tell you, before they had that hydrofoil, it took something like 4 hours to get there. But now it's under an hour. And where do you think all the Latin American tourists, the ones with some dough who can actually afford to go to Roatan, how do you think they get there? They don't take a plane. Not when you can drive or take a bus from practically anywhere in Central America. It takes only a couple hours. They go to La Ceiba first and take the hydrofoil, which ties in quite nicely to a gringo business opportunity niche. And it was a gringo I met that day for the very first time in La Ceiba that had the same idea I had a while back. Turns out, and I'm witness to this, if, for example, you're driving from Nicaragua, Guatemala, Mexico, Costa Rica, whatever, you have to end up in La Ceiba to get that hydrofoil. When you get to La Ceiba, nearly 100% of the time, you get there too late in the afternoon to catch the thing, which means almost everyone has to stay overnight in La Ceiba. And like I said, it's not a pretty town. It's a dump. And the hotels and hostels are spread out all over the place, and there are no great shakes either, believe me. And all the decent hotels and hostels are far from the port, so you got to pay $10 or $15 in the morning just to get you to the port. And even though they've got a couple of hotels with names you might recognize, like Best Western and stuff, the damn things are like $100 a night. The other choice is maybe staying in a cheesy dump for $30 or $40 a night, but man, those are located in some areas you don't want to walk out in the street at night. Last time I was there, I was lucky enough to find a place right on the ocean, and you'd think that'd be awful nice, right? Well, it was not a nice beach. A lot of trash around, a lot of iffy-looking people. An ugly neighborhood, to say the least, during the day, and at night, you wouldn't want to walk 2 blocks away from your hotel. Worse yet, in the morning, when you get up and pack, have breakfast and all that, you got to get a taxi to the port, and that's $10 or $20. But I said that already, right? So there's crappy, cheap hotels and expensive, fairly good ones, and they're all far from the port. So anyway, I'm talking to this gringo in a decent little restaurant also owned by a couple retired gringos. Funny how here in Latin America, so many nice little decent, very hygienic restaurants are owned by retired gringos. Anyway, the guy says, Johnny, I got a great business idea, and I'm looking for a partner, preferably a gringo. He said, Johnny, I've been looking for a nice commercial building for sale close to the port, and I found one. I think it would be perfect to remodel into a number of first world style hotel rooms or rental units. He said, I know I could clean up at 30 or 40 bucks a night. And people who are going to Roatan will love it because it's an easy walk only 4 blocks from the port. And I said to him, yeah, every time I come through, I have the same idea. I said, I don't want to live in La Ceiba, so it's not for me, but for some other gringo, oh, it's a perfect opportunity. He said, you know, I got it figured out. I can't do it myself. I need another gringo to do 50-50 with me. He said, and I know this oh so well. You know how it is here in Latin America. If a gringo opens a business, most likely it'll be a success. And then as it starts rolling along, he's there the first 6 months or a year to get it established. Then after all those 20-hour days, he rightfully says, man, I need a vacation. I'm going back to Jersey. Then, of course, he puts his best guy or gal in charge, comes back whenever, 2 weeks, 3 months. And as soon as he arrives, he sees it's a disaster. Things are missing. It's dirty. Things are broken. It's as if there's this kind of entropy on steroids here in Latin America. And the gringo soon enough realizes that he's got to be there almost all the time or his business is going to go into the crapper. Which is why Ralph said, his name is Ralph, Johnny, I need a 50-50 gringo partner. Half of the time I'll be there, half of the time my partner will be there. But we've got to watch the thing. And I know with these cool 4K surveillance cameras and stuff, you can keep an eye on the place, but believe me, there's nothing like actually being on the premises yourself. Because, he said, as you probably know, once you put surveillance cameras in, the Latinos are certainly on their guard, at least for a couple of weeks. However, entropy on steroids sets in, and they forget they're there, and they fall right into the same old bad habits, except you've got them captured on camera now in high definition. And then Ralph said, and this cracked me up, he said, it's like that old Rudyard Kipling story. You remember that one, Johnny, where the British came down to Tanzania or the Congo or some godforsaken poop hole to put in the very first railroad, and they hired all the local African guys who were sheep herders. They didn't even have any shoes. And those Africans, man, they could work. And in the sun, too. No white British guy ever had that kind of stamina. But when the cat's away, you know, the British would take off for a while, leave the guys working, and they found, without a British white guy and a pith helmet around, the Africans would just sit down under a tree and take a break forever until the white guy in the pith helmet returned. And no matter what the railroad company tried, they just couldn't break that habit. Then, one day, a German surveyor working for the British Railroad had an idea. He knew how superstitious they were. For example, if they saw an owl in a tree during the day or an albino monkey or impala, well, half of them would walk off the job or not show up the next day. So this German surveyor did a little experiment. Believe it or not, he had a glass eye. And every time he and the white British bosses would take off for a while, he'd take that eye out and put it on a tree stump, pointing it directly at the workers. And guess what? As long as he had his eye out on that stump, they worked their asses off as usual. So you can guess the moral of that story. If you're going to start a brick-and-mortar business here in Latin America, you have to be there regularly. Or at least make some surprise visits and do have some cameras. Oh, and if you have cameras, make sure you show them it's up on the internet and you can watch the cameras from anywhere. You have to demonstrate because these days, Latinos are accustomed to cameras and they're also used to the fact that more than half of them here anyway don't work. And the glass eye bit, well, I think that only works in Africa. Latinos are smarter than that, though they do have a superstitious streak that runs wide and deep. And speaking of superstition, you know, I've never met a Latin woman who hasn't been to a tarot card reader. In fact, I was once with a Latin lady who was furious, really pissed off, because she had an appointment at the Bruja, the card reader, and the person in front of her, the lady getting her cards read, was running way over time. As if somehow it was a legit appointment with a real doctor and the natives in the waiting room were getting restless. But I digress as usual. Where were we? Oh, yeah. Talking with Ralph, my new gringo buddy, you know? You run into him at bars and restaurants and hostels, hotels, whatever. And all of a sudden, just because you're from the States, you're new best buddies. And he's asking you, in this case me, to go 50-50 with him on a no-tell hotel in La Ceiba. It's like that down here. You meet a guy and 2 hours later, he just might be stepping into one of the biggest business deals of your life. I'm not kidding. Hey, like Bogart's Rick in Casablanca said to Claude Rains as the police chief, Renault, I think it was the very last line in the whole movie. He said, Renault, this could be the start of a beautiful friendship.
Oh, and by the way, that movie Casablanca also produced another great line that we still use today. I use it. He said, round up the usual suspects. Hey, and there was even a movie named The Usual Suspects. It was a great movie, too. So even when you're way off the gringo tourist trail, you do stumble into a gringo here and there. Hey, don't laugh. That's how a lot of gringo partnerships start out. Two people in a bar, hotel, drunk tank, whatever. They meet and suddenly they're partners. And they've got a kick-ass business going. Or it might go the other way, as has happened to me at least twice here in Latin America. So anyway, this new gringo buddy of mine said, Johnny, want to take a look at the place? You got to see this. And I had a few hours to burn, so I said, why not? Hey, I'm always up for a new boots-on-the-ground adventure. Anyway, we took a cab through a couple of nice and a couple of trashy neighborhoods. So soon enough, as the man said, we were around 4 or 5 blocks from the port. Also a rundown, weather-beaten area, mixed low-end residential with some tacky-looking businesses and restaurants and stuff. We're talking the kind of restaurants the locals go to, not gringos or expats or anyone on vacation. If you're a backpacker, you know the drill. You've stayed in these neighborhoods and you've eaten at these restaurants, you know, where there's no running water in the bathroom and such, where they've got a grungy, moist hand towel instead of paper towels in the bathroom, you know, just a recipe for Montezuma's revenge, which is pretty much the standard for all Chinese restaurants in Latin America. Though I must say, in the larger Latin cities, there are some high-end Chinese restaurants that are fairly expensive. Those will be located in high-end malls and upscale districts with generally recognizable Chinese franchise names from up in the States, meaning you can trust they have pretty decent first-world sanitary standards. By the way, just to repeat a very good rule of thumb when you walk into any restaurant, first, take a trip to the bathroom, and if they haven't got paper towels in there, do an about-face and get the hell out. Oh, and I'd do an about-face, too, if it smells like a ninth-grade gym locker. Ew. All right, so my new gringo friend took me to a kind of dilapidated 4-story office building. Man, it was a typical, scruffy, middle-class Latin business office all the way, meaning they had the usual deaf, dumb, and blind painters on the job. I don't know where they get these guys from. They paint on tile, on glass, on lamps. The overspray goes everywhere, and they never clean it up. And the colors people choose. Man, it seems like a third of Latin America has painted Bolshevik gray, another third institutional vomit green, and the rest just any color that's on sale at the hardware store. It seems like there's a Molary and Curly Acme painting service in every Latin town. And obviously, they're in big demand, too. Problem number one, painters don't use drop cloths or masking tape. Problem number two is that they're on the job painting when others are still working, doing plumbing, electricity, putting up fixtures, and laying tile. Which is why every new paint job has multiple greasy fingerprints all over it. You know, what it boils down to is new construction and remodeling jobs are 100% price-driven. They've got the cheapest light fixtures, the cheapest electrical and plumbing fixtures. They buy the cheapest paint that's on sale, etc., etc. But, you know, low-class fixtures and paint splattered all over the place, those kind of ugly details are easy to fix. In fact, I don't think I've walked into a dank, grungy, middle-class apartment yet that could be absolutely revitalized and looking first world all the way if you just dumped in an extra $500 or maybe a grand. So anyway, we're in this 4-story dump that's for sale. And when he told me the price, I think he said it was 160 grand. And the fact that there were at least 4 office spaces on each floor that could be turned into hotel rooms or even small studio apartments, I thought, man, this could be a gold mine. 30 or 40 bucks a night, you list it on Airbnb, market it to the small trickle of gringos and large trickle of upscale Latins coming through on their way to Roatan. Because like I said, the whole point is anybody coming from mainland Central America going to Roatan ends up in La Ceiba. That's where you have to take the hydrofoil. So you got all these people coming in late in the day by bus and car. They have to stay overnight. And even if you stay at the nicer 3-star hotels, you pay $100. For what? You only want to sleep there and head to the port early in the morning. All right, that said, we had a tour through the building. And believe it or not, the place had 2 elevators. And then I said to the guy who was showing us through in Spanish, of course, because nobody speaks English in La Ceiba, how often does the power go off in this neighborhood? Believe me, that's something you want to know if you've got an elevator in the building. Oh, and speaking of power outages, here's a fact I'm sure you didn't know. There are neighborhoods and places in every medium and large Latin city that the power almost never goes out. Well, maybe for a couple of seconds here and there, but not for any prolonged length of time. Yet in other sections nearby, the power can go off 10 minutes, 20 minutes, an hour or two, a couple times a week. So why is it that some places the power is very steady? Well, that's because the politicians live there, The high rollers live there. The roads are nice. They got a few Starbucks and Walmarts. Yet nearby, where the common people live, it's not surprising to hear from the natives that the power goes out 3 or 4 times a week for 2 or 3 hours at a time. Of course, first world franchises here in Latin America come prepared. They all have backup generators because they know the power can go out. So even if it does and you're in a Wendy's, Walmart, or McDonald's, in about 2 seconds, it'll kick right back in. That'd be thanks to the standby generators. But the truth is, if you're living in an upper middle class or upscale neighborhood or subdivision, your power will be pretty damn steady. But still, I always recommend you have a little generator or solar. But you know, that's me, and in a past life, I was a real engineer. So naturally, I've got an affinity for gadgets, useful or otherwise. So anyway, I said to the guy showing us around, how often does the power go out in this neighborhood? He says, oh, a couple times a week, maybe 10 minutes, 20 minutes at a time. And I said, what if you're in the elevator and the power goes out? He said, I don't know. I've never been in the elevator when the power went out. Right question, wrong answer. All right, so we got into the first elevator. No, it wasn't an Otis or Mitsubishi or Schindler or Krupp Hitachi. None of the usual suspects. See, I just had to throw that in there. Man, this was a rickety old no-name generic model if I ever saw one. But it worked, and I noticed when I got in, the elevator floor was about 3 inches above the level of the main floor. So if you weren't watching your step, you'd catch your toe on the lip and fall right in on your face. The next thing I noticed, there was a place in the upper corner for a little dome camera, but there were only 2 wires hanging out there. No camera. And the exhaust fan, well, that wasn't spinning either, so it did smell like a 9th grade locker room. So far, so not good. Anyway, first stop, 4th floor. You know, I couldn't help but cringe when I heard a terrible scraping sound as we went up past the 3rd floor. I'm thinking, that's not good, because the elevator shuddered a little bit as it scraped past whatever. I'm thinking something's stuck in the shaft, and it ain't good. Obviously, no one's bothered to get in there and check it out. Though I did say to the guy who was taking us around, did you hear that? And he said, hear what? Now, the kicker in this elevator trip was that, like I said, there's 4 floors in the building, but the push-button panel went from 1 to 6. So where were the other 2 floors? I'm thinking, where'd they get this thing? An elevator surplus store or parking lot scratch and dent sale? So there were 6 floor buttons on the elevator, but only 4 floors in the building. Well, surprise, surprise, we ended up on floor number 4, but the button turned red for, get this, floor number 5. Turns out whoever wired the thing screwed up both the numbers and the floor synchronization. That meant you passed 4 for floor 3, 3 for floor 2, and 2 for floor 1. Only in Latin America, huh? So there we were in a middle to lower middle class neighborhood, awful scruffy, a 4-story office building in disrepair, and both elevators actually worked, sorta. And my new gringo friend, Ralph, kind of sensing that I might be good for a project like this, well, he prodded and cajoled me, even paid for my lunch. But I was having none of it. You longtime listeners may have heard me mention that in all the business partnerships I've been here in Latin America and back in the States, there's only been one guy I partnered up with where we had a real smashing success, and he was a Latin lawyer. How about that? Oh, and here's a piece of advice. Never go into business with a family member. But you knew that already, right? All right, so I'm sure you're thinking, Johnny's all over the place again. Where's he going with this? Well, I'm talking about gringos finding business niches. And here's what I think in regards to this gringo's idea. Man, it's a great idea. But I only know that because I know La Ceiba, and I know that gringos and upscale Latins in Central America and Mexico have to make the ground trip to La Ceiba before they can catch the boat to Roatan. And La Ceiba, the dump that it is, only has expensive hotels and kind of crappy hostel-type hotels. Though, since I've been there a few times, I was lucky enough to find a place that I stay at frequently. Not a nice neighborhood, especially at night, but they do let you park your car there for an unlimited time in a secure garage. So let's say you land in La Ceiba, you stay the first night, you park your car, and you're going to stay in Roatan 2 weeks. As long as you come back and spend another night at that hotel, you get the parking for free. However, if you just come back to pick up your car, he'll charge you something like $10 a day, but that's negotiable. So you're much better off just booking the hotel for that last day. It's $30 or $40, whatever, instead of paying $10 a day for parking. But you know, everything in Latin America is negotiable. So anyway, my new gringo friend's looking for a partner, but I'm not recommending you go in business with this guy or even undertake that kind of a project unless you know about construction. You can speak decent Spanish and you're willing to live in La Ceiba for half of the year because that's the kind of partnership he's looking for. And as mentioned, La Ceiba is a kind of a dump, though they do have some nice restaurants in some upscale areas because every town has some wealthy people. And they're not going to live next to a ghetto garbage jumper sewage treatment plant, right? But I tell you, I'd never want to live there. It's just too damn freaking hot. And like I said, it's ugly. That's why I'm always trying to drive the point home that you have to spend some time in any given Latin city, be it 6 months, even more. If you do, it's a guarantee you're going to find some business niches that are just begging to get filled. Oh, and by the way, as a follow-up on business niches, remember in last week's show I was talking about the gringo who set up that laundromat situation where he found out he could just clean up during the rainy season? Since drying clothes is a huge problem because of all the rain and moisture, the problem is people put their clothes outside on the line all the time, even in the rainy season. And that's very hit and miss. Well, there's another part to that story I neglected to tell you. Guess I was babbling too much, ran out of time as usual. Anyway, he repeated the same thing I tell you guys all the time. In his particular case, it really hits home. In fact, he repeated it more than once. He said, whatever business you start here in Latin America, you better have 6 months money in the bank or in a drawer somewhere, enough working capital to pay your help, pay the rent, keep the doors open for 6 months, because it might take that long before word gets out that you're open and the money starts flowing in. Now, most of us who've started our own businesses know that already. We've learned hard lessons, and that seems to be one of the biggest problems with any gringo opening a business here in Latin America. They think day one, as soon as they open the doors, the money's going to start flowing in. And it might, but don't count on it. And I'll tell you, the truth is, especially with young gringos and expats, people I'd say under 40 years old who start businesses, they don't have enough cash to keep it going. They seem to run out the day they first open their doors. And it's in those early days, especially with a bar and restaurant, where people don't know about your place yet. Word hasn't gotten out. So most gringos and expats who've gone that route get caught in a squeeze. I'm going to guess that 50% of gringo businesses that fail would have eventually caught on or even gone gangbusters had the owners had enough dough in reserve to keep the doors open for those critical first few months when people just aren't coming through your door yet. And it's true that you'll find, unless you're solidly on the gringo tourist trail, and you've got a ton of foot traffic going past your place every day, fact is most gringo and expat brick and mortar businesses just aren't that lucky. Because it's the universal law that the more foot traffic, the higher the rent. In fact, I know of a case of a married couple who came down from New York and started a nice bar and restaurant in the absolute wrong place. So after a few months, they just died on the vine. There was no foot traffic. But had they opened the place just one block over where there's tons of foot traffic, I think by now they'd both be driving nice cars and living in a very cool neighborhood. Again, the problem with them, they didn't have boots on the ground long enough. They rushed into the situation because they saw a couple of supposedly ideal storefronts in a business district that offered quite cheap rent. Of course, I knew this couple, but I wasn't in close contact with them. And a couple of months later, when a lawyer friend of mine mentioned they'd open a bar and restaurant in this particular location, I thought, man, they did what? And in that moment, I thought of that old cliche, penny wise and pound foolish. You know, just because the rent's cheap and the place looks nice, that doesn't mean anyone's going to find it or happen to stumble in unless there's a lot of foot traffic. Which brings us full circle right back to the fact that you have to have boots on the ground 6 months or more before you jump into anything. All right, there I go, generalizing again. Of course, there's always exceptions to the rule. Though there is one thing I know for sure. A lot of gringos come down. They're only here for a week. They have their eyes open, all right. They see a few business niches, but the truth is, it's not a good idea to dive into any business venture here after you've only been down here a week or so. You have to nose around for a while and see what things are really like. For one thing, you got to hook up with someone who speaks Spanish. You got to talk to the locals, the gardeners, the garbage men, the cleaning ladies, the neighbors, people working at the businesses down the street and next door. Most of all, you have to check out the competition. Because for me, you know, my business rule number one is, I don't care if I've got competition, I just don't want gringo competition. The truth is, practically any gringo expat could wipe the floor with Latin competition day in and day out. But if you have just one halfway smart gringo who's your direct competition, not good. And now here's an email from a very cool Canadian guy who attended my previous Expat Insider Seminar. He says, hi, Johnny, I've been working on a draft email with a huge thanks to you for the Expat Insider Seminar last month. In the meantime, he says, I'm curious about the dangers or even the existence of wildfire epidemics in Central or South America. The number of lightning storms and the rainy season must result in a lot of strikes and the risk of fires, but perhaps things are just too wet, lush, green, whatever, to ignite. I bring it up because, again, we're having a hell of a time in Western Canada, and I know wildfires are a constant danger for anyone living in sections of Southern California, too, thanks to Santa Ana and those notorious winds. This might be a topic of concern for a lot of folks considering moving south of the border. I'm curious how Latin insurance companies would handle a loss caused by a wildfire. You don't have to answer directly on this, just thought it might be an interesting thing to hit while you digress. And he says, by the way, 2018 has become even worse with over 566 fires burning in Canada right now. State of emergency was just declared also. There's so much smoke nearby, it seems like dusk all day, and the water bombers are flying overhead constantly. The traffic is terrible, you can imagine, with thousands of evacuees showing up at town shelters, etc., etc. Now I see the feds have called out the army. Lots of luck with that. And he says, you know, Johnny, this is not a once-in-a-thousand-year event like a volcanic ash or pyroclastic flows or something. This is annually. And quite frankly, the air quality just sucks here. The sun is even blotted out. The ash falls like snow and covers everything inside and out. And it stinks. So that's reason number 7,652 to get the hell out of Dodge. That comes from Wayne. Thanks for that, Wayne. Though I didn't know they had a Dodge to get the hell out of in Vancouver. But to answer your question about wildfires in Central and South America, yep, sometimes when you're driving along, you'll see little fires here and there in the mountains, but that's a controlled burning usually by the farmers to clear overgrowth because, you know, things grow like crazy here in Latin America, and if farmers don't do the occasional cutting and burning, well, you know, the jungle can take over everything. But as far as gigantic, out-of-control fires, you just don't hear about them, and you rarely see them on the news. Though occasionally, whole sections of lower middle class housing will burn because the stuff's all made out of wood. Oh, and by the way, most of the fires that actually do damage are caused by misuse of fireworks, which are legal here. And man, do Latins love their fireworks. And of course, the crazy and out of control use of fireworks is the number one cause of neighborhoods burning down too. But as reported many, many times in the past, gringos and expats do not live in wooden structures. It's all cement, concrete, and rebar. In the medium and high-end subdivisions we choose to live in. And about fire insurance, insert laugh track here.
You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy.